Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The title for this week's program is The Great Reset from God. The World Economic Summit took place this last week in Davos. And the WEF is well known for being a meeting of globalist socialists. Klaus Schwab, the founder, has been talking for quite some time about his Great Reset, which is all about creating a unity between business and government. It's about environmentalism, globalism, social governance, where businesses must support a leftist big government ideology. So by way of video call, Trump spoke at Davos, laying out his agenda, and given Trump's election win, as one attendee said, Trump won, globalism lost. Little did the globalists realize that God would have his own great reset. Victor David Hansen, conservative with the Hoover Institute, did a piece this week called Why Davos Hates Trump and Democracy. Quote, this week was the inauguration of Donald Trump, but it also coincides with the meeting of the world's elites at Davos, Switzerland. If you don't know what Davos is, don't worry about it. It's not that important in some ways. I mean, it's not doing a lot of good for the rest of us, but it's important because it has aspirations that are quite dangerous. Basically, its premise is that if we got together all of the unquote, quote, smart people, those are people who have letters after their name, live in the right zip codes, they're wealthy, they're professors, or they're key government officials. And we put them in this beautiful, idyllic place. They can think up totalitarian dreams that then, from the top down, can be implemented by the hoi polloi, the many. And they have an actual disgust for elected governments because, you see, elected governments make mistakes in their view. They elect people, and then those people do the wrong thing. They have these 19th century borders. They believe in legal-only immigration. They don't believe in the redistribution of money. They actually believe in free market capitalism. They're opposed to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and they don't want to put mandates on corporations, ESG. The reason that the Davos crowd is really angry this week is that Donald Trump was elected. He's a Jacksonian populist nationalist who believes that the Constitution and the creation of this last great hope for Earth is unique and singular. And he trusts it and its constitution more than he does these Davos international organizations. Trump just pulled out of the International Criminal Court and the World Health Organization. Donald Trump poses a threat to the Davos crowd. And more importantly, his threat is amplified because it works. Nations that have followed Davos policies are collapsing. So note in Hansen's piece here, his summation of Trump's basic philosophy, America's unique traditional values that should be upheld, and I'll address that in the Bible study. What we have going on here in America right now is a civil war between Christianity and paganism, between God's truth and Satan's ideology. This war has been going on ever since the fall of man, but has become especially noticeable in America now that the Christian consensus is dissolving, shrinking, and pagan Marxism is increasing. The war can be described as a religious war, Christianity versus wokeism. I heard one person describe the war this way. It's a war over a definition of justice, Christian justice versus social justice. It's really a war over the source of truth, whether truth comes from man or from God. And it's really a war over who is God. First Kings chapter 18, verse 21, Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord, Jehovah, is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. Well, the left is in rage and also in fear. Think about this, all that they've lived for, the very foundation of their worldview and their ethic is being overturned. No more DEI officers in government, no more DEI teaching. The religion of global warming is being repudiated. No more open borders and globalism. No more teaching transgenderism in public schools. Not only are leftist ideologies being reversed, but leftist ideologues are out of work. They're losing their funding, their grants, their comfortable salaries. Here's just one article. Trump's federal DEI purge puts hundreds on leave and nixes $420 million in DEI contracts. Did you realize it was that much money? And the layoffs are just beginning. Many businesses are getting rid of their DEI offices and officers. The offices that the Biden administration pressured companies to create. Did you know that under Biden, the NASDAQ required companies to include DEI reports in their annual financial statements if they were to continue to be listed as a public traded company? Hence the hiring of DEI officers in every major American corporation. But in December, the Supreme Court overturned that requirement. Well, you think about this. By using the guise of anti-racism, the left was able to get taxpayer money and government jobs to teach people exclusively Democrat Party ideology, the ideology of identity politics, and the oppression narrative of cultural Marxism. What an amazing scam. A complete end around to the First Amendment of the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, but now the left has had that scam taken away from them. Have you been following the left's response to Trump? It has been surprisingly quite subdued. Even the opposing rally against Trump during the inauguration was nothing compared to the 500,000 that showed up to protest Trump's inauguration in 2017. The media this last time hardly reported on the opposition rally. I couldn't even find an aerial photo shot, probably because the crowd was so small, they didn't want to post it. Here's something from NBC News. Protests are a fraction of 2017. Now maybe the left is still organizing their response. Maybe they will be emboldened and start to riot. But for right now, they have very little to say because they've realized that they've lost favor with the public. Here's an article from the leftist New Republic entitled, "Here is how badly Harris lost to young men." In 2020, young men, ages 18 to 29, voted for Trump 35%. In 2024, 65%. That is a 30-point swing, which is unheard of in politics. So the Democrats realize that if they're going to win elections, they're going to have to keep quiet for a while. It's now open season on Democrat policies for ruining the country. Another example, in 2017, the Village People sent a letter to Trump asking him to cease playing their song, YMCA. 2025, they're singing the song live at Trump's inauguration parade. One good description I heard this week is that people are now fighting back against leftist ideology, transgenderism, DEI, open borders, because the eye of Sauron is no longer looking at them. The eye described in Tolkien's Lord of the Ring, depicting the rule of evil and what happens when evil rules in a culture. Those who speak up for what's right will get punished. So most people will not take the risk. This is mentioned twice in the Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 12. When the righteous triumph, there is great glory. But when wicked men rise, men hide themselves. And Proverbs 28, 28. When the wicked rise, men hide themselves. But when they perish, the righteous increase. Once people have the backing of the culture in the White House, they're more willing to speak up. Trailblazers open up the way for cultural revolutions. It reminds me so much of the biblical character Gideon. Once he started to win his battle against the Midianites, then all the other tribes of Israel started complaining to Gideon for not inviting them to the battle, when in fact, they probably wouldn't have come even if they were called. See, the vast number of people only show up when you start winning. Speaking of winning,
you're going to be so proud of your country if I get in. You're going to be so proud of your president, and I don't care about that. But you are going to be so proud of your country, because we're going to turn it around and we're going to start winning again. We're going to win so much. We're going to win at every level. We're going to win economically. We're going to win with the economy. We're going to win with military. We're going to win with health care and for our veterans. We're going to win with every single facet. We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning. And you'll say, please, please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore. Mr. President, it's too much. And I'll say, no, it isn't. We have to keep winning. We have to win more. We're going to win more. We're going to win so much.
So here's some counsel. Don't be squeamish over President Trump's executive orders. Don't be deceived by the moral relativism in our culture that has sympathy for the devil. Trump is doing the right thing. Romans chapter 13, verse 4, he's a minister of God, an avenger against those who do evil. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 26, a wise king winnows the wicked and drives the threshing wheel over him. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 8, a king who sits on the throne of justice disperses all evil with his eyes. Over the years, so many conservative politicians have failed to overturn evil legislation and pass righteous legislation. The Mitch McConnells, the Mitt Romneys of the world, who believe in what they call bipartisanship. They fail then to turn back evil, partially because of cowardice, partially because they want to get reelected, partially because they really don't have any strong convictions concerning right and wrong. But the most likely reason of all is ideology, a belief in pluralism, that pagan values should have equal footing in America as much as Christian values, as if, to be fair, Satan needs to have equal time, equal financing, equal footing with God. Plus, there is this fear that since President Trump has pardoned all of the J6 protesters and pardoned the pro-life protesters, then some leftist president may come along and pardon all of his constituents who have been charged with crimes. Well, first, President Trump's pardons are for those people who are clearly over-prosecuted for political ideological reasons. If it weren't for the fact that conservatives were hated, these people would have been given the usual $100, $200 fine for trespassing. Second, never let the fear of people using power to do evil to keep you from using your power to do what's right. That kind of fear is like saying a father should not leave his home because some fathers might abuse it. Therefore, we have to get rid of what the Bible has to say about fatherhood and home. Or we can't have homeschooling because some parents may abuse it. Or we have to get rid of cars because some people are bad drivers. This is leftist relativistic thinking, where right and wrong is based upon outcomes, not the higher law of God. The president is to drive the threshing wheel over the wicked to the full extent of the law. And if another president comes along and drives the threshing wheel over the righteous, that president will bear the judgment of God. But let's never fall for the lie that you can't exercise the authority to promote righteousness because other people are going to use that authority to do evil. You know, this is one of the great lies of the devil that paralyzes people. Fortunately, Trump is not paralyzed. He has a clear moral compass in this regard. Now, in surveying what Trump has done in his first week of office, I can think of about 7 leftist lies that Trump has taken action against in his executive orders. And this is really amazing. Can you think of what they might be? Can you name them? They can actually be categorized. First, transgenderism. No more boys in girl sports. No more flying pride flags on government buildings. Second, DEI. All DEI initiatives are to cease, and all DEI officers are removed. Third, global warming. The EV mandates and the petroleum restrictions are gone. America has withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accord. Fourth, open borders. Here's a quote from Trump in regard to illegal immigration.
I think we got to have tough conditions. Tell people to come out of the shadows. If they've committed a crime, deport them. No questions asked, they're gone. If they've been working and are law-abiding, we should say, here are the conditions for you staying. You have to pay a stiff fine because you came here illegally. You have to pay back taxes. And you have to try to learn English. And you have to wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. Here's the quote.
I voted, unlike most Democrats, and some of you won't like it. I voted for 700-mile fence. But let me tell you something, folks. People are driving across that border with tons of everything from byproducts from methamphetamine to cocaine to heroin. It's all coming up through corrupt Mexico.
No, I got that one wrong, too. Maybe this is the right one.
Together, we must build a future where the promise of America is kept for a new generation. We also know that keeping this promise means upholding America's tradition as a nation of laws and a nation of immigrants. The American people believe in immigration, but they also believe that we can't tolerate a situation where people come to the United States in violation of the law. Nor can we tolerate employers who exploit undocumented workers in order to drive down wages. And that's why we're taking steps to strengthen border security, and we must build on those efforts. We must also clarify the status of millions who are here illegally, many who have put down roots. For those who wish to become citizens, we should require them to pay a penalty and pay taxes, learn English, go to the back of the line behind those who played by the rules. That is the fair, practical, and promising way forward.
Yeah, that was wrong also. I think this was the right one.
He's the one that killed people with the bad water, including hundreds of thousands of people dying and also killing our citizens when they come in. We are living right now in a rat's nest. They're killing our people in New York, in California, in every state in the union, because we don't have borders anymore. Every state is now a border. And because of his ridiculous, insane, and very stupid policies, people are coming in and they're killing our citizens at a level that we've never seen. We call it migrant crime. I call it Biden migrant crime. They're killing our citizens at a level that we've never seen before. And you're reading it like these three incredible young girls over the last few days. One of them, I just spoke to the mother, and they just had the funeral for this girl, 12 years old. This is horrible what's taken place. What's taken place in our country, we're literally an uncivilized country now. He doesn't want it to be. He just doesn't know. He opened the borders. Nobody's ever seen anything like. And we have to get a lot of these people out, and we have to get them out fast because they're going to destroy our country.
This last Sunday, ICE rounded up 956 illegal immigrants. All the time, ICE knew where these people were, what crimes they committed, where they lived, but they could do nothing because the Biden administration prevented ICE from enforcing U.S. immigration law. ICE wasn't even able to call illegal immigrants. They had to be called non-citizens or undocumented. Trump changed all that. The Biden administration was even chartering planes to bring in thousands of immigrants in what they called a refugee program. I don't believe most Americans realize the extent of their open borders ideology. They really wanted to repopulate America with non-whites. They actually believed that this was their righteous undertaking to change the makeup of America with their globalist vision. Mayorkas was certainly behind this. He was on the board of an organization called HIAS, an organization that was pushing for that kind of globalism. Well, maybe next week I'll do an entire program that'll be dedicated to this one part of Trump's agenda. Number five, Trump is undoing abortion, and we'll hear more about that soon. Number six, economic lawlessness, a government hiring freeze. The State Department will halt all foreign aid for the next 90 days. The firing and the replacing of all inspector generals who were supposed to root out government corruption. Tariffs on countries that are undercutting American business. And number seven, judicial lawlessness. Trump is cleaning out the Justice Department, revoking the security clearances of those who lied and prosecuted their political opponents. So there's much to be covered in each of these seven areas, and I plan to cover them over the next few weeks. But for now, just note that there are quite a few leftist lies that need to be dismantled. Oh, sure, there's still free speech, but Trump is ending the policy implications of leftist worldviews. So now it's time for a Bible study. Judges chapter 2, verse 16. Then the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. This is a reference to the civic leaders that God raised up between 1400 and 1100 BC, who delivered the Israelites from foreign invaders. There are 12 of them: Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Barak, Gideon, Tola, Jared, Jephthah, Elon, Abdon, Samson. These are those spoken of in the New Testament book of Hebrews as those who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises. Now, my program last week, I pointed out that the recent political situation in America sheds a lot of light on the book of Judges, how the people were looking for a deliverer, someone with the courage, the conviction, the know-how, the backing of the people, the backing of God to liberate Israel from her pagan occupiers. And this is very similar to the Trump phenomenon. Those who voted for Trump are not worshiping Trump, nor do they look to Trump over God, but just like the ancient Israelites, who certainly weren't worshiping Gideon or Samson, they still appreciated God sending someone who would root out the corruption, because the people by themselves were powerless to stop the beast or to drain a swamp. Well, the point I made last week is that God raised up these leaders. It was not a work of man. As we have seen, the hand of God, his providence in Trump's presidency. But let's look at these Old Testament judges again and consider another point. What were they actually doing or accomplishing? Notice again, Judges chapter 2, verse 16. Then the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. Verse 17, yet they did not listen to their judges, for they played the harlot after other gods and bowed themselves down to them. They turned aside quickly from the way in which their fathers had walked in obeying the commandments of the Lord. They did not do as their fathers. You see anything peculiar in verse 17? The text says the people did not listen to their judges. Well, wait a minute. There is not a single text in the book of Judges that indicates that any of these judges were prophets or preachers. They were military civic leaders that rallied the people together to overthrow foreign invaders. They were not expositors of the law. We don't see them calling the people back to Jehovah God in any explicit way, as did the prophets. And I'm sure we would all agree that Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, the four main judges mentioned in the book of Hebrews, were not prophets, they were not priests, they were not preachers, but merely patriotic citizens with many personal flaws. So in what sense did the judges have something to say, and in what sense did the people not listen to the judges? Well, the judges, by their actions, had a very important and profound theological moral message for the people, even though they were not expositors of the law of Moses. The basic message that they were communicating by their actions was that the nation of Israel was to have an identity separate from the paganism of the day. The paganism represented by these foreign nations invading Israel. They believed in one basic truth. Exodus chapter 23, verse 23, "For my angel will go before you and bring you into the land of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Canaanites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I will completely destroy them. You shall not worship their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their deeds, but you shall utterly overthrow them and break their sacred pillars in pieces." Now, liberal critics of the Bible claim that this was simply Jewish bigotry and nationalism. But no, God called the nation to have a national identity with specific, unique values and morals. So these judges, with this worldview, were disgusted with the status quo. Israel uniting with pagan neighbors, religious and civil syncretism, the ecumenicalism of the day. The judges believed that Israel, their country, was founded by God. They were at the very least operating under the general principle of the first command, "You shall have no other gods before me." And so Othniel would lead Israel to take out the invading Mesopotamian kings. Ehud would assassinate the king of Moab and overthrow the Moabite occupation. Shamgar would push out the Philistines. Deborah and Barak would drive out the remaining Canaanites. Gideon would defeat the occupying Midianites. Tola and Jair would work to keep out a variety of minor invaders. But then, as we'd often read after each judge, after the judge Jair, Judges chapter 10, "Then the sons of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, serving the Baals and the Ashtaroth, the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the Ammonites, the gods of the Philistines. Thus they forsook the Lord and did not serve him." Notice that the issue wasn't just these foreign invaders, but their ecumenical pagan ideology. Then in Judges chapter 11, God raised up Jephthah to drive out the Ammonites. And in Judges 13, God raised up Samson to reduce the power and the control of the Philistines. But as we read in Judges chapter 2, verse 17, the people did not listen to their judges. In what way? Well, in all likelihood, what was going on is that many of the Jews did not have the same nationalistic, pro-Jehovah convictions as true believers in Israel. As far as many of the people were concerned, Israel should just go along with and team up with the Canaanites. And I'm sure they said, after all, we all just worship the same God. The people believed in pluralism and moral relativism, while the judges believed that Israel had a unique identity as a nation under Jehovah, with Jehovah's morals and values. And again, these judges weren't preachers. They weren't prophets. They weren't asking for much. They're only asking for what we would call today basic traditional national values. Now, there are two specific examples in the judges where we see how the people would not listen to the judges. Generically, we're to discern that they didn't listen to any of the judges because after the judges drove out these foreigners and their foreign influence, the people would once again fraternize with the enemy. But the two specific examples are first Gideon. Before Gideon would go to war with the Midianites, God told him to tear down the altar of Baal located in his town. Gideon did this at night, and the next morning the Jews of the city demanded that Gideon be killed for tearing down the altar of Baal. Judges chapter 6, verse 30, then the men of the city said to Joash, bring out your son Gideon, that he may die, for he has torn down the altar of Baal. And indeed he has cut down the Asherah, which was beside it. Now I'm sure you all know what was involved in this worship of Baal and his female counterpart, Asherah. You know, it was a religion of child sacrifice, abortion. It was a religion of fertility, sexual license, and deviance. So it was popular with the people. So one would think that the Jews would have been thrilled that the altar of Baal was torn down. But no, rather than wanting to throw out the Midianites, they want to kill Gideon, the one who stands up for God. And it probably had something to do with the fact that the Jews were afraid that the Midianites would retaliate against the Jews for taking down one of their altars to one of their gods, which the Midianites did. As soon as they discovered that the altar of Baal was destroyed, they gathered to battle against Israel. Judges chapter 6, verse 33. Then all of the Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east assembled themselves, and they crossed over and camped in the valley of Jezreel in central Israel. Wow. All of the Midianites, all of the Amalekites, and the sons of the east assembled to attack Israel. Why? Because they knew that that altar to Baal represented their ideology. It justified their occupation. The religion of the Jews was the ideology that didn't accept the Midian political ideology of totalitarianism and its LGBTQ immorality. Imagine what would happen if a U.S. president removed the Stonewall Inn in New York City, that homosexual bar that Barack Obama declared to be a national monument in support of LGBTQ. The removal of it would represent an attack on LGBTQ ideology, and the left would go to war. And many of Trump's executive orders, such as the elimination of DEI, the deporting of illegal immigrants, the pulling out of the Paris Accord, rulings against transgenderism being taught in public schools and in public sports, these are major attacks on their core ideology, the religious worldview by which they live. As the Jews were enraged with Gideon, so are leftists today when anyone undermines their beliefs, such as gender fluidity, that we should actually be teaching children in school that they can either be a boy or a girl. These people are so far from God that they're horrified that anyone would doubt their pagan worldview. So these Jews were horrified with Gideon, either because they were into Baal worship themselves or they were cowards without conviction. They held to a pluralistic, let's accept everyone's ideology philosophy, not realizing where it would lead. Well, the second direct example of Israel not listening to the judges is Samson. Samson retreated back into the territory of Israel, and the Philistines moved their armies into Israel and demanded that the Jews turn Samson over to them. Judges chapter 15, verse 11, then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the clefts of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I've done to them. So they handed him over to the Philistines. Judges chapter 15, verse 12, they said to him, we have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines. And Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not kill me. So he said to him, no, but we will bind you fast and give you into their hands. Yet surely we're not going to kill you. Then they bound him with new ropes and brought him up from the rock. They knew for certain that this was a death sentence for Samson. And again, the people didn't discern God's hand in working through the judge, either because they were cowards or because they were religious moral compromisers. This reminds us of Stephen's sermon in Acts chapter 7, where Stephen says to the Sanhedrin, "This Moses, whom they disowned, saying, 'Who made you a ruler and a judge?' is the one whom God sent to be both a ruler and a judge." So the point here is that ungodly people will always disown the deliverer that God raises up. And this is the point in Judges chapter 2, verse 17. They did not listen to their judges. And what were they not listening to? It was not primarily the judges' call to war, but they rejected the basic God-centered worldview. Again, the judges weren't preachers. When they arose, they didn't straighten out all the sins of the people. They simply moved the direction of the nation towards separation from paganism. When we read certain commentaries or hear certain evangelists speak about the Old Testament reformations and revivals under the judges and under certain kings, we often get the impression that these were full-on spiritual revivals where everyone in the nation was turning back to God and obeying all of God's law. Not so. They were just general swings back toward conservative values and a more majority belief in the singularity of God and his truth. If you're expecting President Trump or any social reformer to be some sort of George Whitefield or Billy Graham, you're failing to understand the biblical record. Civil leaders moving the country back toward some sort of semblance of righteousness is never meant to be a substitute for personal repentance and salvation, conversion, the new birth. All God does with social reforms is to restrain the sin in this world, to expose pagan ideology and to hinder it for a while. Although we're thankful for social reforms and the reformers, although we cheer them on, individuals responding to the personal gospel call is still the only thing that truly saves. As at Pentecost, in the temple, the Apostle Peter preaches individual salvation. Peter said to them, "Repent, each one of you be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins, and you will receive the gift of the Holy Spirit." And with many other words, he solemnly testified and kept on exhorting them, saying, "Be saved from this perverse generation." So I hope you understand what I'm trying to communicate here. Support the president's reforms as far as America moves back to some sort of semblance of Christian values. Don't be a naysayer because everything's not perfect. And given the examples in the book of Judges and the Kings, lower your expectations concerning what God does through civil government. And remember, the goal we really need to pursue during all of this is the salvation of individual souls. That some people truly turn back to God in faith and repentance. Well, thanks for listening. Keep in the word. Keep on your mission for God. And may Jesus Christ reign.